Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Living dangerously, Trump holds off attacking Iran, but for how long? Also, Europeans threaten the U.S. over Greenland and threaten Russia with seizure of oil tankers. It would seem Europe's delusions are truly limitless. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube in Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's kick it off with Mark here. First of all, let's talk about Trump in Iran. I mean, we had such a buildup to an attack, and for various reasons, it was either Iran's going to get a nuclear weapon in 2 weeks. Oh, no, it's ballistic missiles. No, it's protecting protesters, which has a very thick and ugly story attached to that. But ultimately, he called it off. Is this a case of taco?
No, not exactly. I don't think so. We see a resuscitated attempt at regime change in Iran less than a year after the previous one. And that one was begun with decapitation strikes, both Mossad assassination attempts on the ground in Iran, as well as airstrikes meant to decapitate the Iranian political and military leadership, which were only partially successful. And then the war quickly developed into a long-range strike war of attrition that was tilting in Iran's direction because of their ballistic cruise missile and long-range strike drone ability, which they did not have before. So that's why Trump went in, dropped some bombs, declared victory, and called for a ceasefire. This time around, they attempted a more classic color revolution on the ground with the activation of insurgents under the guise of protests after an attack on the Iranian currency, shorting it via financial markets to attempt to create unrest. Starlink provided insurgents, their communications were shut down, Forbes tells us, by Russian electronic warfare technology, perhaps a Tobol system provided to Iran, which shut down Starlink, some 40,000 terminals. They must have been distributed over more than a year, right, to select Mossad insurgents. And they were very violent, attacking 53 mosques, burning 180 ambulances, hundreds of security personnel killed by gunfire, beheadings. I mean, this was true ISIS-style terrorism on the ground in Iran, but they got things under control. And the Trump administration started to freak out, and they made to do strikes. And Reuters told us, citing anonymous U.S. officials, that strikes were imminent, that strato tanker refueling aircraft were in the air, that everything was ready to go. But then we heard that the Arab Gulf states were trying to get Trump not to launch an attack. And then even Netanyahu supposedly was telling Trump, look, don't launch this attack. And specifically, he cited the lack of Israeli restockpiling their air defense systems, which is the exact same problem the U.S. has. That is both of their Achilles heel right now. They had hoped to get a quick regime change in Tehran. And when it threatens to go back, as in the 12-day war, to a long-range strike war of attrition, neither the U.S. nor Israel has the air defense interceptor missiles to fight this war against Iran.
But let's look at the aims here, George. I mean, because do the Israelis and the Americans have the same aim? Because it looks like, given, you know, there's one data point, we have the Venezuela kidnapping of Maduro. Is this what Trump wants? He wants an in and out. He wants something quick. And the Israelis are saying, no, if we start this, it's going to be a long march. It's not going to be easy. Is this one of the reasons why you think Trump just backed away? Because he wants to win and have it quick.
I think so, because that's what we kind of know from Trump's previous interventions, going back to his first term in office. Like, he's two attacks on Syria. He wants something that's over and done with out within 24, 48 hours. And there are clearly people within the administration who do want the regime change. I mean, John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, he was obviously instrumental in all of this, and he was clearly manipulating Trump with presenting him with all sorts of lurid stories and images and videos of these terrible things that the government was doing. Oh, look at those body bags. You know, they're just massacring people with machine guns and so on. So Ratcliffe, who was very close to Mossad, was clearly manipulating Trump into this protracted involvement. But I think Trump really doesn't want to do this. I mean, I think that for him, this is a really long-term business. And I think he allowed himself to be persuaded by the various Arab states, you know, Egypt and everybody else, who said this is a really bad idea. And I think the warnings that were issued from Tehran saying this is going to be very serious, we are really going to retaliate, this isn't going to be what we did in June, we're really going to start hitting all the neighboring countries. And I think Trump was suddenly facing an absolute disaster. I mean, if there's going to be real attacks on all of America's allies in the region, then it'll be on him. So I think Trump was going ahead with this. It's clear from those messages that he sent out on Truth Social, help is on its way. And, you know, if you touch the hair on the head of any one of these protesters, you know, all hell's going to break loose. So I think Trump backed away. The question then is, of course, is this the end of the project or not? He's kind of being somewhat humiliated at the moment by Supreme Leader Khamenei. I mean, Khamenei is really in a Twitter storm, showing his complete disdain for Trump, and the Americans have said, we have foiled your plans, we have defeated you. So we have to wonder then how Trump is going to react to this taunting by Khamenei.
Well, Mark, you said in your first answer is that this was an attempted color revolution. Have those assets been exhausted right now? I mean, this was, 40,000 Starlink terminals. I mean, this was a huge investment, a huge project, probably covering many, many years. Have those assets gone? Because now it's just going to be raw power versus raw power.
Yeah, one of the things that evidently the Russian electronic warfare technology, it also enabled the Iranian government to track down the locations of the Starlink terminals, which means that Iran has taken into its custody hundreds, if not thousands, of Mossad and CIA operatives on the ground, you know, assets on the ground in Iran, across the country. So I would say that, I mean, while I would never say that Mossad's assets are 100% exhausted, because Mossad, but I think they're severely curtailed. I think years of work in building up a covert regime change attempt on the ground has been thwarted within really a month by Iran. They've seemed to have gotten everything control with it within a month. And I don't think that this is something that can be launched again anytime in the near future. And even if the U.S. brings another carrier group into the region, they're moving the Abraham Lincoln from the Pacific to the Gulf. That gives them increased strike power, but it doesn't solve the fundamental problem of air defense. The U.S. cannot defend Israel, and it cannot defend its military bases throughout the region. And Iran still has their nuclear option of blocking the Strait of Hormuz, just flooding it with sea mines or other options.
George, in all of this here, it's not clear to me that Israel was going to be involved in this operation. And if it wasn't going to be involved in this operation, why was Trump doing it in the first place?
That's a very good question. It isn't clear, though. I think in this case, America would be taking the lead. At some point, Israel would get involved. Maybe Israel was figuring that Iran would retaliate against the United States by hitting Israel, and then that would provide Israel with the pretext of joining in. But yeah, that was without question the the Israeli plan. But it's not clear really why Trump wanted to do this, because what he did last June was at least within the parameters of U.S. foreign policy. Okay, that's a longstanding U.S. foreign policy. Iran must not have nuclear weapons. I mean, he's the only one who actually started bombing, but nonetheless, he stayed within those parameters. Regime change is a Tel Aviv project, and Trump himself hadn't at all embraced that goal.
Mark, you're disagreeing. Go ahead.
Yeah, I disagree. I think the topic of nuclear weapons, that was a complete red herring, and the U.S. just went through with it, create a public rationale. Even last June, Trump was tweeting out or truthing out about regime change in Iran. Right?
Why did he stop within 3 hours?
Why did he stop? It had nothing to do with the U.S. bombing. It had to do with the exhaustion of Israeli and U.S. air defense over 12 days of return.
What did they discuss?
That was just Israel and things. I mean, U.S. bombing itself was limited to the attacks on the nuclear.
The U.S. bombing was just a way to get out. It was just to declare some type of victory and get out. The U.S. bombing accomplished nothing of any use to the U.S. The U.S. is as dedicated to regime change in Iran as their real goal in Iran as Israel is.
But that was Israeli. But it was the Israel and Iran who were just simply exchanging strikes on one another. How was that going to bring about regime change?
It wasn't. It was intended.
It wasn't going to happen.
Decapitation strikes on the ground at the beginning that failed. Failed.
Right.
So there wasn't going to be any regime change. So Trump only came in and bombed as a way to declare victory, save face, extricate Israel, and demand a ceasefire.
But I think both of you would agree. I think, regime change ultimately is the aim, but it's how it's done. The Israelis want the Americans to do the heavy lifting, and then they will come in and claim the prize. That's what it looks like to me. But it's so bewildering to me. Why would Trump even consider such a risky operation that could go so easily south on him? And on that note, gentlemen, I have to jump in. We have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We're talking about some real news, and I'm going to throw it back to Mark here. What is the Europeans up to? They using kind of a classical World War I, World War II paradigm, the Eastern Front, the Western Front, they're antagonizing the Russians, threatening war, and now the Americans with their funny business with Greenland, that they will defend Greenland with what? I'm not really sure. I mean, this is just a foreign policy of delusions and illusions that can be very, very dangerous, at least most importantly, to the geopolitical standing of Europe. They're shooting themselves in the knees. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so I think Trump is emboldened both in Greenland and Iran by his perceived success, his great success in Venezuela with the kidnapping of Maduro and seemingly co-opting the leadership of Venezuela. There was just a humiliating photo op of Delcy Rodriguez, the new president of Venezuela, basically kowtowing to Daniel Radcliffe, the director of the CIA, who just showed up in Caracas, I guess, to administer. But the Europeans, they never imagined, I think, that this type of aggression would be turned on them. And they're floundering. And now Trump has threatened tariffs against the handful of European countries that have sent their mighty European armies.
How big is that army so far?
Norway sent two, Finland sent one, Germany sent like 11 or 13. I think it's about 50 European troops in total, if you count the UK as well, which is not part of the EU, but close enough. So, I mean, this is a joke, and Trump regards it as a joke. And Trump seems, for whatever incoherent, irrational reason, to desire Greenland as a U.S. territorial acquisition. Never mind that NATO, he already has basing rights in Greenland. There's more U.S. troops in Greenland than there are Danish troops already. And they would give him the basing rights, the mineral rights, anything that he wanted, they would give him, right? But no, he wants a territorial acquisition, I believe, because of some type of puerile obsession with recreating the presidency of William McKinley from 1897 and McKinley's territorial acquisitions of Hawaii and the Philippines and the Americas.
You could go back to President Polk. He doubled the size of the United States. He's definitely thinking of Mount Rushmore. But, you know, George, what is the rationale? I mean, you're preparing the Europeans. They say they're preparing for war against Russia. The conflict in Ukraine is going badly for their satellite there in Kyiv. And what kind of assets they have to take on Russian oil tankers and annoy the Americans at the same time? I mean, it's a bit they've bitten off a little bit more than they can chew. I'm trying to be polite. This is broadcast television.
No, it really is. And it's very strange for Europe really to dig in its heels and make this an issue of principle. And it's not anything that anybody had been thinking about at all, about Greenland and
well,
Denmark.
Well, since when has the European Union had principles? I don't understand.
Denmark must retain ownership of Greenland. And you think, well, you know, why should it? Particularly, and this is where it gets important, the Europeans have been saying now for I don't know how many years that Russia is the existential threat. Russia is this threat. I mean, how many times has Mette Frederiksen herself, the Danish prime minister, has said, whoa, Denmark is under threat from Russia. Macron has said this, Starmer, Merz, they've all said Russia is our existential threat. This is why they've been badgering Trump ever since he returned to power, that, oh, you've got to support us because we are under threat from Russia, whether it's drones or Russian aircraft, you know, or whatever, or you know, they're destroying our infrastructure under sea. You have to help us. Well, it's perfectly understandable why Trump would say, okay, well, I will help you, but there's a price to pay. I mean, there's always a price to pay. And they don't seem to understand it. They think, well, they're going to get this for free, the support from the United States. But then the other point you mentioned is now they want to get really aggressive with Russia. You know, they're now ready to start boarding these, what they call the shadow fleet of oil tankers, emboldened as they were by the seizure of the Marinara recently, because the British took part with the Americans in seizing this Russian flagship. They say, hey, we're now going to do this on a regular basis. So you're going to do this on a regular basis. You need the Americans. You're not going to take on the Russians without the Americans. So you need the Americans. And now you're trying to antagonize the United States. It makes absolutely no sense. And once again, the Europeans look absolutely ridiculous.
Mark, you know, one of the things that they yell and scream about, that this is dividing NATO. It could destroy NATO, which is perfectly fine with me. But that, I don't see it as that. I mean, the Europeans are going to cave. It's just how elegantly or inelegantly they're going to get there. And Trump is not going to help them get out of this mess that they've created for themselves. Mark.
Yeah, I mean, the EU, the Europeans in general, we want to include the British, they're kind of stuck between the Greek mythological Scylla and Charybdis here, between a rock and a hard place that is entirely of their own making with their strategy of kowtowing to whatever Trump wants. And I agree with you. If Trump pushes hard enough, if no one in the U.S. is able to convince him to change course, then eventually the Europeans will have no option but to back down and give him what he wants. Ultimately, I don't believe it will be the end of NATO. It will certainly be a body blow to the transatlantic relationship. But I think they'll just count and hold on with fingers for another few years until another U.S. President comes in. But to show you where they are in a mental place, the EU high foreign policy muckety-muck, Kaja Kallas, she made a comment this week to the press that the global situation is so bad for the Europeans, evidently, that although she has sworn off alcohol for years, it feels like it's about time to start imbibing, she said.
Yeah, that'll give her some clarity, I guess. Okay. Yeah. You know, George, I mean, in looking at the polls, the idea of the United States acquiring Greenland, it's not particularly popular among Americans, but it's not unpopular as well. Okay. So, and you know, considering the first part of our program here, Trump is looking for a win. This is an easy win. Okay. Because there will be a section to say, yeah, he's the first president in almost 100 years to expand the territorial expanse of the United States. So that's meaningful for some people, I suppose. I don't see its geopolitical importance. George.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a big win for him once he acquires it, because you can see the images. He triumphantly arrives in Greenland and says, this is ours. This is the first acquisition for the United States since Hawaii. You know, that was, you know, it was already a long time ago. And the Americans, I think, would celebrate. And, the truth that he sent out when he announced the tariffs, I think that does resonate among Americans, because Americans do think that NATO has been essentially a welfare system provided for the Europeans by the United States. You know, we've been subsidizing them. And Trump said this. Yeah, all of these countries, Denmark included, you know, we've been subsidizing you. You know, you've been having a nice old time of it with all your generous welfare system. And I'm sick of this. And this is a longstanding thing with Trump. This isn't just something he came up with. This, sure. You know, the book that he wrote at 2000, so it's already a quarter of a century ago, was all about that, how the United States is subsidizing the European welfare system. So I think Trump, I agree that, you know, people don't care that much about Greenland, but if he's going to pick a fight with the Europeans over Greenland, he will enjoy public support over that.
Yeah, Mark, to die on the hill called Greenland, I simply don't get it.
Well, I mean, the one thing that no one's asking is what the Greenlanders think, right? There's 50-some thousand people there, and I doubt that you could find more than a few dozen of them that would actually like to be part of Trump's America. They're protesting outside the U.S. Consulate there. They're, you know, and protesting in Greenland in the winter. That's, you know, that's a thing.
That's so, a thing.
Yeah, again, I mean, we can talk about submarine passage through Atlantic Straits in the area. We can talk about geopolitical position for Golden Dome, for air defense, placement of missiles. But the truth is that NATO, that Denmark would give the U.S. any of that it wanted, right? It's not about that. It's just about a visceral Trump wanting to expand what is the United States. And yes, Trump is perfectly willing to die on that. And I haven't heard that anyone in the U.S. cares enough to argue against that. And that leaves Macron and the others in a very bad position where they're going to be forced to back down. And on one hand, Macron is saying, we need an Oreshnik of our own after seeing the Russians launch one into Ukraine, clearly indicating that they're a little bit afraid of that thing, the Russian hypersonic ballistic missile. On the other hand, the obvious real military threat, you know, of taking actual European territory away, is their lord and master in the United States.
Yeah, you know, George, one would think that they would cut their losses. But the more that they resist, the more Trump will publicly resent NATO. And the more people talk about NATO in the United States, and, you know, and you know, when you, we were coming up, NATO wasn't talked about, you know, what Plato to NATO, not nonsense here. But the more people learn about it, the more they understand, well, what do we get out of this? It's been a very much a pedagogical experience. And to end up on this here, gentlemen, Greenland doesn't count enough to hurt Trump in the United States, for sure. It only hurts Democrats as they party and escort around these unknown Danish figures. All right, on that note, gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here, RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules. We'll be right back.